The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, Daniel Strain of Science's news department is here to fill us in on some recent stories from our daily news site. So, Daniel, first, another solution, or maybe multiple solutions, to a sort of mammoth mystery from the past.
Yeah, this is actually a very, very old paleontological mystery, what killed the mammoth. And actually, according to this new study, it's a bit complicated, kind of like the murder on the Orient Express.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about that extinction first.
One of the fascinating things is it wasn't just the mammoth. So about 50,000 years ago, this was, you know, sort of right smack dab in the middle of the last ice age, you started to see these pretty massive extinctions of a lot of big mammals. So not only do you have the woolly mammoth, the very iconic mammoth, but you have saber-toothed cats, ground sloths, and steppe buffalo, a number of different animals as well, started to slowly dwindle, and then many, in fact, wound up dying off completely. Humans for a long time had been fingered as one of the possible culprits behind this demise. People weren't really sure, and this new study actually kind of gets to the bottom of who's responsible.
Okay, so humans have normally gotten a lot of this pinned on them. What did this team do to try and look a little bit deeper at that?
Well, they not only looked at humans, but they also looked at sort of how climate change might have played a role. So they did pretty broad surveys. They looked at where climate was changing around the periods that we see these animals disappear. Then they also looked at archaeological data to see where humans were at the same time. They also made some basic assumptions about just how diverse these animal populations were as well.
And so what was the result of all of this multivariable kind of analysis?
Well, exactly like Agatha Christie's murder mystery, there seems to be a lot of different people responsible. So in many cases, the scientists think that climate change seems to be largely responsible. They point to the case of woolly rhinos. They disappeared completely from their homes in Eurasia about 14,000 years ago. But it actually turns out that they grew pretty significantly when humans first sort of entered into their range. So these researchers think that humans were probably not the single driving factor and that climate change instead was.
But I take it that humans played a bigger role in other areas?
Or? Yeah, the other case would be steppe bisons, where we seem to be a lot more at fault. These species seem to slowly go extinct about 35,000 years ago, and that seems to be largely related to climate. But then about 16,000 years ago, when humans entered where the steppe bison live, that rate of dying off just started to skyrocket, and these animals really started to circle the drain. So the scientists seem to think that it was climate change sort of started things going, and then humans really, really kicked it into gear.
Well, what about the most celebrated case that you alluded to at the start, the woolly mammoth?
Yeah, unfortunately, the case of the woolly mammoth seems to still be fairly complicated, and researchers still aren't particularly sure whether or not it seems to be mostly humans, mostly climate change. Some other researchers have pointed out that there could be a lot more going on than either human hunting or climate change, and that other things might be involved as well.
And next, a story about Viking sunstones. What exactly might those be?
Well, no one's really sure what a sunstone is exactly. It's something that's referred to in a lot of Viking literature, but we just don't know. It presumably helped the Vikings to navigate their stormy seas around their homes.
So how do the legends say these sunstones sort of help them navigate?
Well, the big problem facing Vikings is that, as you know, these folks were pretty big mariners. They had to get to various places to pillage and to explore about 1,000 years ago, and they mostly navigated by sunlight, just telling where the sun was. And that's fine, except that these Vikings lived pretty far in northern Europe, and that a lot of the times the weather was very cloudy, and you can't navigate when the weather is cloudy. So people have often wondered how they didn't just get horribly lost.
And these sunstones were supposed to help them with that. Now it looks like a team of scientists is claiming that these sunstones might be some sort of calcite crystal. Is that right?
Well, their sort of hypothesis is that calcite, which is sort of a very basic prism that you'd be familiar with, is involved. And as folks who've played with prisms know, calcite crystals, they have this very interesting property that they split light. And these particular crystals basically cut light in half. So light coming in gets just divided and turns into two images. Now, how this might actually help people like the Vikings navigate is that on a cloudy day, you still have these rings of sort of polarized light that circle the sun in layers. And presumably, if you have something like a calcite crystal which can split the light, you can actually find out where those rings are sitting and then where the sun is.
Well, it's a nice model, but how could you really establish that that's what the Vikings were doing?
And this is the actual very fun part about it, is these researchers actually went out and they did their own test. They made one of these sort of hypothetical sunstones, and they actually took it out in a boat on a very cloudy day. And it turns out the measurements that they did were very accurate, actually within 1% of where the real location of the sun is.
So even on a cloudy day, they were able to sort of judge where the sun was using this quote-unquote sunstone.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's important to note that no one, archaeologists, haven't really found a sunstone of any kind on any of these Viking ships. So at this point, this is all sort of in the realm of fantasy, but it's an exciting one.
And finally, to end on a decidedly upbeat note, it looks like happy people live longer.
Yeah, this actually shows that that song, Don't Worry, Be Happy, might be practical advice for for living a long time. What this study found, actually, is that older folks who tended to have more positive outlooks also tended to at least appear to live longer.
Well, I guess one of the problems is, you know, how do you actually assess that someone has a positive outlook? How do you actually measure that?
And that's actually a really interesting question and a difficult problem for researchers. When you ask people in retrospect, it turns out that they tend to maybe seem a little bit more every cloud has a silver lining than usual. They tend to grade their problems in sort of relation to, you know, all of the other problems that people are having, and they tend to be a little bit more hedging their bets and being a little bit more optimistic.
And so this study did something different?
They did, actually. What they did is they actually followed a group of about 11,000 50-year-olds and older and had them actually report about 4 times a day just what their emotional state had.
So doing it in real time rather than
doing it in real time. Yeah. Whether or not they're anxious, worried, happy, content. And so it turned out that the results are pretty startling. So the people that had reported the least positive outlooks, about 7.3% of those happened to die within the next 5 years.
And what about the people with more positive feelings?
And actually, it looks like that the people with more positive feelings, that rate was cut down by about half to about 3.5%.
Wow. But I mean, I guess if somebody was going to die within 5 years, they might have been near death anyway and have good reason for being unhappy. I mean, how could something like that be factored out?
Yeah, there's a lot of sort of confounding factors there, not only in sort of a person's health, but also in other things that may determine how long you live, your wealth, your educational status. So they looked at a lot of those variables and they actually took them out of their analysis. Even with all of those variables taken out, a person's health status and everything, the happiest individuals had a risk of dying within the next 5 years that was about 35% less.
But this is just a correlation, right? I mean, presumably we still don't know if happiness is the cause or the effect in some sense.
Yes, it's definitely not a smoking gun, but the researchers do point to the fact that an emotional state or well-being can play a pretty big role in health and sort of argues for better social support and economic support for seniors.
Okay, Daniel, what other stories are you looking at for the news site?
Yeah, we have a new look at a new paleontological find of a saber-toothed squirrel. And another story looking at how cleaning up old cells in the body of mice can actually seem to help them for age-related diseases. And then on our policy blog, Science Insider, we have a story examining a report that looks at how fracking off the coast of Great Britain actually may have caused an earthquake. And finally, on our weekly online chat, Science Live, we have a great discussion on the signs and dangers of asteroids with orbits that bring them close to the planet. It's set to coincide with an asteroid that's going to be coming very close to the Earth on November 8th.
So we'll all have to keep our eyes open.
Absolutely, yeah.
Daniel Strain writes for the Science News Department. You can check out the latest science news and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org, where you can also join a live chat, Science Live, on the hottest science topics every Thursday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.